Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. When the University of Connecticut men's basketball team takes the court tonight in its season opener, an exhibition against American International at Gamble Pavilion in Storrs, it will mark the first time in more than 25 years that Jim Calhoun won't be on the sidelines as head coach. As was the case before he arrived, it may be hard to count UConn as a national force without the man who led the Huskies from relative anonymity to four Final Fours and three national championships, including an improbable 2011 title that put him in the rarest of coaching company. Calhoun was a master recruiter and an expert cultivator of NBA talent who helped put UConn on a par with blue-chip palaces like Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and North Carolina. He was also autocratic to a fault and a legendary grudge holder who's been accused of skirting NCAA rules to win. Indeed, when the Hall of Famer retired in September, the cancer survivor left in declining health and with his program facing a ban from this season's NCAA tournament. What no one can argue with is 873 wins over 40 years of coaching. UConn alum and Loyola University New Orleans political science professor Peter Burns Jr. is the author of Shock the World, UConn Basketball in the Calhoun Era, which is published by Northeastern University Press, appropriately the place Calhoun began his coaching rise. Peter Burns, welcome to the Roundtable.
Ian, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start at the end of the story and then work our way backwards. Where is the UConn program without Jim Calhoun? Shudder to think.
Exactly. I would think that the program is in a bit of a flux. I think it's a little bit up in the air now. And I think that the answer to that question is unknown. If I had to take an educated guess, I would say, beyond the shadow of a doubt, my guess would be that it would be on the decline because you can't replace a legend. And so now we're going to find out if the University of Connecticut basketball program it has had success because of the program or because of Calhoun. And I think it's been because of Calhoun.
And what specifically has he done to bring the program to where he left it?
Everything. From pushing for new facilities, upgrading the talent, creating a culture, creating a mindset, winning basketball games on the court. Steve Peichel, one of his former players who's now the head coach at Stony Brook, said that Jim Calhoun does everything right. And I think that the person who's going to have to replace him is going to have to do everything right. And that's a very difficult thing to do because very few coaches do everything right.
You write that Calhoun was initially thinking of not taking the UConn job, and he kept delaying his deadline to make a decision when UConn tried to hire him. Why was he apprehensive about leaving Northeastern?
He had a basketball powerhouse at Northeastern that was a relative powerhouse. He had been to the NCAA tournament something like four of the previous five seasons. And the Northeastern team was better than UConn at the time. The program was better than UConn's program at the time. He looked at UConn and saw lots of disadvantages. Its location out in the middle of nowhere would suggest that he couldn't get top players to come to UConn. Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, Syracuse had regularly beaten UConn. They were the princes and kings of the Big East, and UConn was a pauper for sure. The program had decrepit facilities. It had no reputation. And so when he looked at that, he said, wow, it's just, it's probably just better to stay here than it is in Boston than it is to go to UConn. But he decided to go to UConn because he thought that they could be something. They had the Big East. And if you do things right at UConn, you can win national championships. If you do things right at Northeastern, you could be the 12th team in an 11-sport town. And Calhoun knew that and wanted bigger and better.
But it was a big risk also, because if he failed at UConn, he may have shot his coaching rise in the foot. Who knows if he gets another job with the same upside as UConn presented. So how did he go about building what we see today at UConn from such sort of humble beginnings?
Jim Calhoun's first practice, he walks in and the players are there, and it's hotter in this old gymnasium that's located in the field house. And the newspapers had been put on the windows, and the heat had been turned up by Calhoun. And he walked in, and all the players saw were pails, garbage baskets. And Calhoun walked in and said, if you're going to be sick, do it in these garbage pails because I don't want my managers to have to clean up vomit. And I tell you that story, Ian, because it's emblematic of what Calhoun did when he got there and what he did throughout his time. And he said, we're going to be the hardest working team in the country. We're not going to be the most talented, but we're going to be the hardest working. And he really kept that up in his 26 years. In fact, he kept that practice, that first practice in the Guyer gym, he kept that as part of his repertoire for 26 seasons. And so if you played basketball at UConn, you went through that. And so I think the first thing that Calhoun did was he brought a mindset, the mindset of a stone cutter, of a blue-collar New England person, and he said, we are going to be a blue-collar team in our work ethic. And UConn really was a hard-working team under Calhoun. And so that's the first thing he did. The second thing he did was he, at his introductory press conference, said that the borders to Connecticut are closed, meaning that when UConn started in the Big East, they lost a lot of games to teams in the Big East that were powered by players who went to high school in Connecticut. Boston College had like five players, including John Bagley, who played in the NBA for 10-plus seasons. He was Big East Player of the Year. And so Calhoun looked at Connecticut and said, there's talent here to win. I can win in the Big East if I can keep the talent at home. And he was able to do that with a player named Chris Smith, who helped UConn get into the NCAA tournament, win the Big East tournament, go to the Elite Eight. And so the first prescription, really, for Calhoun was to work hard, get players from Connecticut, and if we could win, he could ignite what he saw, which was he saw Husky Mania in Connecticut before Husky Mania was there. He saw 25 papers covering Connecticut. He saw a sellout in a year in which the team won three games. In their last game, they sold out the year before Calhoun got there against Syracuse. And he said, listen, if we can win, people are going to flock to games here. And Connecticut, being a high-income state, is going to support this team and give us lots of money. And he happened to be right.
I don't think anything illustrates more the allure of the Big East that he first noticed than the 2011 title, when UConn was considered almost a non-factor as we got toward March and just got on fire, won the Big East tournament, and went all the way to the national championship. So how much do you think the dissolving of the Big East as we know it, which is an ongoing process, surely the league will be different in the years to come from what we've seen over the last quarter century, had to do with Calhoun exiting now?
I think there were some other factors that why Calhoun left. I would imagine that if he were in an earlier place in his career, that would have been a factor that was higher up. But clearly the dissolving of the Big East is a detriment to UConn, but I think that Calhoun's health concerns were probably paramount to his leaving.
And what about the fact that the team is banned from the tournament this year?
You know, I thought that was the reason that Calhoun would come back. I didn't think that Calhoun would leave a team in that shape, and I believe that when he broke his hip in the summer of 2012, it gave him time to say, I just can't do this physically anymore, and I need to let it go. And I think that's really what happened. But I think that if Calhoun thought that he could physically do it, I mean, he did miss 8 games last year, and he's missed a lot of games. And so Calhoun said, I think I have to give this up because I just can't be there, and I can't miss another. He missed 11 games last year. 8 because of health reasons and 3 because of a suspension. And so I think his health concerns were paramount. I don't think Jim Calhoun is the type of person to leave a ship that is sinking. And so that's what makes me believe that there's another story to this. And the other story is that he just didn't believe that he could give it his best and therefore decided that he was going to it in the hands of his hand-picked successor and then help Kevin Ollie during the season and in this time period now.
You know, Peter, you're certainly a fan and a follower of the UConn program and were before Calhoun was there. So in the course of this project, what did you learn about Calhoun? Did you come away with, you know, more respect for him? Did you sort of see the bad spots? What's your takeaway, if you had one, from this project?
Well, I'm torn myself. And I write in the book that Calhoun changed the state of Connecticut, the University of Connecticut, college basketball, the UConn program, and that my degree is more valuable now than it was before because UConn is a brand name, and Jim Calhoun made it that, and Jim Calhoun's teams made it that. But the book does cover every part of the UConn program during the Calhoun era, and that included some arrests. It included some NCAA violations. But I would say that in the end result, my takeaway, my grand takeaway, is that Jim Calhoun really views himself as a father to these players. And he calls them his sons. And he treats them in a way that a very strict father would treat their sons. And the sons, the players, were very much opposed to the rigor that Calhoun imposed on them. Many did not have a dominant male figure in their lives when they were growing up. They were the dominant male figure in their family. And as Tate George, former point guard, told me, the next thing I know, I've got this guy screaming in my face. That didn't go over all that well. But in the end result, the players look back and say that Calhoun changed their lives, that he cared about them, that he taught them. I mean, Danielle Marshall told me that Calhoun taught him how to be a man. And my take on this would be that this father figure is definitely planned. Calhoun views his team as a family. He wants them to be close. They certainly had a common enemy in him. But my takeaway was that Calhoun was not just the stopping, screaming person on the sideline, but he was a person who cultivated relationships with people around him, including assistant coaches, trainers, managers. And so he really viewed UConn as a family, and he wanted it to be tight-knit. And the father figure image is one that really came through very strongly for me.
That's Peter F. Burns, Jr., author of Shock the World, UConn Basketball in the Calhoun Era, an era that is now officially past. And Peter, thank you very much for the time, and we'll look forward to seeing how UConn does in this brave new world it faces.
Ian, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.